Hey, this is Will Wheaton. I know, right? You're listening to the Rule Zero Podcast.
From the Rule Zero Studios in High Bar Zoom, this is Rule Zero, the podcast for gamers to talk about gaming. All games, all gaming, all the time. Welcome to the conversation.
Hello, and welcome to the Rule Zero Podcast. I'm Pete, and I have powers beyond your comprehension.
I'm Chris, and I can comprehend a lot.
You sure can.
I'm quite comprehensive.
You're very comprehensive. Oh,
I am. So welcome back to the show.
You even put footnotes and everything.
I am exhaustive and comprehensive.
You certainly are.
In fact, people have had quite enough of me.
Have they indeed?
Apparently.
Well,
anyway.
Trump.
So, hey, I came to do a show. How about you?
I came to do a show.
So this show is about gaming.
Yes, it is.
And you and I are actually gamers.
We are actually gamers who play games.
And what do gamers do when they are not doing podcasts?
Game.
They game, yeah. So I've gamed, actually, quite a bit.
I have just started gaming again after a long hiatus, and I'm very excited about that.
I am happy for you. What are you playing?
I am playing Legend of the Five Rings.
Okay. What are you?
I am a Unicorn Clan Shugenja.
Okay.
We are playing from the...
Is this the L5R system?
Yes, this is the original Alderac L5R system.
Okay, before it went Oriental Adventures for 3D.
Never mention that to me again, ever.
Got it.
Because I love Karator so much, I can't believe that they would just ditch that in lieu of Rokugan, honestly. Yeah, so we're playing first edition. We're playing the time period prior to the Scorpion Clan coup and Clan Wars. And one of the things that my co-player wishes to do is to play up until the point where the Clan Wars began. So I'm curious to see where we go with that.
Is there a lot of material written for this, or is this his own point in history that he's writing about?
There's much material written about it, but one of the nice things about playing the game is that you can change the way that the written history goes.
Okay, so, cool.
Yeah.
I played Fiasco again.
Good for you!
Yeah, less an interesting setup this time. I don't know why, we just, the dice were not with us, and we had kind of a tame story to go with.
Okay.
And as a result, it was kind of a less interesting game. Not a lot of really Fiasco-like things happened.
That's too bad. I'm sorry to hear that.
I mean, we still had fun, and there was still, you know, stuff we all could do. Nobody was really sitting there too long going, gosh, what do I do for my scene?
Right.
You know? There was still plenty of stuff going on.
I think it's wonderful that you played Fiasco, because one of the most recent episodes of Tabletop with Will Wheaton had Fiasco.
Okay.
And show how to set it up and how to play.
Okay.
Which I think is...
Well, maybe I will have our group look at that.
Mm-hmm.
And see what we can do differently.
All right.
Because I haven't seen that one yet, so... after the Fiasco game, we started to play Dominion.
Oh, excellent. I love Dominion.
Oh, I really want to play Dominion again.
Do you have just the box set, or do you have all the supplemental boxes as well?
Well, this was actually at Eric's.
Okay.
And I brought the... I have the core set,
okay.
And I wanted to get him the core set for his birthday. They didn't have any more, so I got the Intrigue set.
Oh, nice.
Which apparently also is playable by itself.
Yes.
So we broke out mine, and I showed them how to play.
Nice.
And I had never actually played a game, and I had just gone through all the rules and, you know, followed through the tutorial.
Right.
That comes with it.
So you got to play the Intrigue game. Did you bring your Dominion base game?
We didn't play the Intrigue game.
Oh, okay.
We just played the core game.
Gotcha.
Because it was still, you know, all wrapped in plastic and all that stuff. So.
Right.
So we got to play. I played them through that. We played about five turns, and I'm like, I have to go.
Wow.
I don't want to go.
No, because it's a very
I want to finish this game.
It's a very, very engaging game, I have to say. The household in which I was living the year prior to this, we had a regular gaming night, which was Wednesday night, and we usually played Dominion. We got up to as many as 16 people every Wednesday night showing up to games. So we'd have to we had Intrigue, Seaside, Alchemy, Prosperity, and Cornucopia, and we would have to decide what you got to play out of which box. You know,
very
to make
cool.
To make the base.
So the rules that I have, mm-hmm. that's okay. The rules that I have allow for 2 to 4 players, and that is in the core set. What did you do for more players? Is it part of the expansion sets that it says this is what you do for more players?
There are rules that will let you have up to 6 players, but what we did was we split up into 4 groups of 4.
Oh, okay.
And,
okay.
And then what we did was we sat down, and there's a random stack generator online, mm-hmm. so we would randomly generate stacks, and then people would play with that stack. The other thing that we did was we had a tournament one night where myself and my housemates who played created what we called the Bastard 10, which were the 10 meanest stacks we could come up with to play against other people to see what the outcome would be. And it was very... It was a lot of fun, honestly, to play the Bastard 10, because people would just get, you know, all the kid gloves were off at that point. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
I you know, in fact, right now I think, you know, I'd rather be playing Dominion than doing this. So I'll see you later.
Ouch.
Yeah.
I think I can say.
And
it's because I let in this episode, isn't it?
It is. You did it wrong. You let me down.
Oh.
No, you did. You were good. You were good. Good little podcaster.
I'm just gonna cry now. I hope
you're growing up.
Little by little, sunrise, sunsets.
Passage of time. Anyway, yeah. So,
what are you doing besides Dominion and Fiasco? Because I'm only doing L5R right now. So, until my son comes back, we're not gonna get to play that the Burning Wheel.
Right.
Tool.
You know, I broke out my Burning Wheel books. I was like, you know, he keeps making that sound so cool.
Well, it is pretty cool, especially
yeah.
now that I understand the magic system better, I could run your summoner better.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
That's what I was doing for reading, but I'm actually trying to make up something for an intermittent adventure in between 2 installments of the Paizo Pathfinder adventure path that I'm running.
Uh-huh.
We finished the first installment of Legacy of Fire, and it's supposed to take the players to 5th level. But they're only 4th level, and I'd kind of like to get them to 5th level, and I could just say, okay, you guys earn the XP, and you go up.
Yes.
But I kind of want them to suffer for it.
Fair enough.
So there's a dot on the map in Book 2, which is called Onyx Hall, and it gives a little story background, and it's like an adventure seed. It doesn't give you anything for the adventure other than this family was cursed by a slave witch whose family they broke up.
Nice.
So their house is cursed, and this is the cursed house, and they're supposed to live in servitude until the stones themselves burn like an inferno. And that's the curse. And that's all the material it gives you. So I've got to make up something that, you know, gets them to this level, takes 2 to 4 sessions, is location-based, and the solution to the module, or to the, you know, the encounter, the area, hinges on fulfilling a very vaguely worded prophecy.
I thought all prophecies were vaguely worded.
Yeah, I kind of think they're all vaguely worded so that no matter what happens, you can say, this is how it fits the prophecy.
Exactly.
So, I mean, I've actually thought of several different ways that have nothing to do with stones or infernos.
Oh, or you could use them as allegorical for stones and infernos.
Exactly, exactly. Go. So I mean, like, you hear it till the stones themselves... Oh, no, burn like a pyre. That's what it said. Did I say that before? I can't remember.
I don't remember.
Okay, it burned like a pyre. So so I've thought of, like, you know, initially you think, oh, well, stones burning like a pyre, well, that must mean they turn to lava and the place blows up. Well, you don't have to do that,
burn,
you know?
Burn the rocks
of fire. It might even be, you know, some... They do, in fact, do that. it might even be like some, you know, gems that just glow with inner light
or
something.
Like rubies or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it might be something completely not like what you expect. So that's it. That's all I got.
Oh, okay. Awesome.
That's all the gaming I'm doing. Oh, no, I'm also playing in a game, and it's going well.
Right. You are playing in a game, aren't you? And it's going well. Happy to hear that.
Yeah, I'm playing in 2 Pathfinder games, and I'm the worst rogue ever.
You keep screwing up, or you're the worst rogue ever because you rip everything off?
I am just terrible at doing my job. I made up a character who is supposed to be really good at things. You know, I'm supposed to be able to find traps. Oh, I've found traps, all right. Oh, I can find you traps.
Blundering into them?
Yeah, so we're on this, we're doing Skulls for the Smuggler Shiv, or Souls for the Smuggler Shiv, whatever it is. It's a Pathfinder Adventure Path module. It's number one in the Serpent something.
Oh, so it's a canned adventure.
Yes, it is. A serpent...
Oh, you okay? Did you get any on you?
Serpent Skull. Had to go look at it.
Ah, yeah.
Yeah, so I've actually got the modules on my bookshelf, and I am pledged not to open them.
Aha! Uh-huh. Well, there you go.
Yeah. So, Serpent Skull, and I am a rogue, and I am in the very standard out-of-the-box, trappy, sneaky rogue. I can't roll to save my life.
Well, that happens.
I've got a zero wisdom modifier, which means that I've got nothing naturally helping me with perception. And so I'm supposed to be scouting the road ahead. And every single time I am told, make a perception roll, I roll something really abysmal. And the GM tells me, okay, you feel your something tighten around your ankle and lift you up into the air. And I say, I start yelling, trap!
It's a trap!
So that's my character's role. So every time I make a perception roll, I know that it's going to be a single digit on the die and that I'm going to end up in the air.
So you've named your rogue Admiral Akbar.
I should. Every single time I have to make a roll, I end up saying, worst rogue ever.
Yeah, well, you know.
So that's,
we can't
that's
all
my
be
game.
Diamonds, my friend. Some of us are just diamonds in the rough.
Some of us are meant to be impaled on stakes.
That could very well be some of us were meant to be the cautionary tale to others.
That's my guy.
There you go.
That's what I'm playing.
That's what I'm
that's
saying.
Okay. I'm just waiting for this guy to die violently because I know my next character is going to be a halfling on a dinosaur.
Nice.
That's my plan.
Halfling on a dinosaur with a big weapon?
Yep.
Hell yes.
No, he's going to be a druid.
So he can have one of those big spear thingies.
Yeah. Yeah, he could. But his dinosaur is going to be his weapon.
That's great.
He's like, do not F with me. I've got a dinosaur.
When it finds a trap.
That's what the rogue is for.
But the rogue is dead. It died horribly.
Yeah. Well, somebody else will be in front.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
So, anyway, how about some news?
Let's go to news.
It is time for the news.
And we're back.
And we are back with some news. How about some news?
How about some news?
You know what's on the news?
That Gen Con is coming up?
Gen Con is, in fact, coming up, and you know what they do at Gen Con?
They have an awards show, from what I understand. Oh, and they also have girls dressed up in anime characters.
Do they do that at Gen Con? I've never been.
They have
I know they do it at anime conventions because I've been to a couple of those.
No, they do it. They do it at Gen Con too. They don't. It's not just anime characters. It's also superheroes and people from fiction and movies and things like that. So,
yeah, not a lot of people dress up at Origins, but some do. So.
No, there is in fact a separate section for cosplay in at Gen Con.
Oh, cool.
So.
Well, send to us at rulezeropodcast@gmail.com your cosplay pictures. And we will put them on our Tumblr stream.
We'll also put them up on our website.
On our website. Yep. So anyway, that'd be great if we could see those.
That would.
Or just take pictures of people at random at Gen Con.
And if you take pictures of yourself in the midst of gaming, send them to us and we'll put them up also.
Even better. Yeah, that'd be cool. So anyway, let's talk about what this awards shindig they got going on. What is this thing?
This is the Annies.
Any award will do.
Any award will do, yeah.
That's the theme song to Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Plus One Dream Coat of Charisma.
Was it charisma or just glamour?
Fabulousness.
There you go. Positively fabulous.
It was. It was a fabulous.
Some people are fighter Barbie in, after all.
Oh, didn't get on my Barb. All right. So let's talk about the Annies. We'll come back to Barb. All right, so what category are we most focused on?
The category that we're most focused on for this bad boy, I think, would probably be Product of the Year.
Product of the Year has the most nominees listed on the any site. I imagine that's the big one for that's the golden medal for the gamers.
That's the one where everybody squeals. They bring out the tiara and give them the flowers, the bouquet, and they
sing, "Here she is,
product of the year."
I don't know how the song would go.
Of course not.
So one of the things I see on this list for Product of the Year is one that won an Origins Award.
And what is that, pray tell?
And that is Cthulhu Britannica, Shadows Over Scotland,
right,
which won the Origins Award for Best something-something supplement, I believe.
Great.
Yeah.
Fantastic. I feel badly because really, with the exception of Marvel Heroic Role-Playing Basic Game, I know practically no other product.
Okay, well, you've played Champions, right?
I have played Champions.
Star Hero is Hero System.
Okay, that I'm familiar with. I've also played GURPS, so I understand
that. Yeah, so there you go. So we know. So GURPS Horror 4th Edition from Steve Jackson Games is on the list of the nominees. Also, something called Hacklopedia of Beasts, which I imagine is for Hackmaster.
Could be for Hackmaster.
Which was a takeoff of older editions of D&D when 3rd Edition came out.
Right.
Hollow Point, I know nothing.
I don't know anything about that myself, and I feel kind of badly about that. I feel like I should know something about it.
Yeah. Madness of Gardmore Abbey, I have played through a couple rooms in.
Oh, really?
When Mike ran it for us. I believe that was at Gardmore Abbey.
Gotcha. Oh, okay. So Hollow Point is, let's see, it's a role-playing game that uses a novel engine to generate fast, on-the-fly, violent action at the drop of a hat, brought to you by the award-winning developers of Diaspora, which I have played.
Okay.
Single evening's play that encourages regular character death, because
awesome.
Hey, this dare we go through our put our tag on?
Yeah.
Because this shit's dangerous.
Oh, I'll bleep that.
There you go. Told you.
Okay. I didn't know you meant the explicit tag.
How many different tags do we have?
Well, there's the clean tag. Maybe you were going to say something exceptionally clean.
Yeah. All right. Exactly. Because this naughty, naughty, naughtiness is violent stuff.
Yeah, so anyway. Marvel Heroic Role-Playing Basic Game is on the list of nominees. That's kind of the one I'm really kind of standing behind here because...
I like it.
I enjoy what I see, and I'd really like to get to play it.
I concur. I also would like to play it as well. I'd like to play a mini campaign.
Yeah. Well, they're kind of all mini campaigns and as far as I'm reading. So.
Yeah, well, I guess it's... Technically, you're just playing through episodes, you know, or issues of a story arc in them.
Yeah. From the list, I've lost my page. Oh,
I've
there we
go.
Lost
your page again, Avioletti.
Pathfinder role-playing game beginner box has received a lot of positive feedback from Pathfinder people who want to introduce the game to people who are either younger or not used to such complicated systems, which I'm all for.
Fair enough.
And,
is it set up like the original Red Box kind of thing?
No, it's not quite. It's real pretty. It's got a lot of counters in it. So there's counters for the players and got some really cool stuff in there.
That's nice.
It's got an adventure that you can play through solo to see how the game is supposed to go.
Gotcha.
Then it gives simplified instructions, but not... It takes away some of the more complicated rules, but it doesn't change the rule system any.
Okay.
You know, it says, here's the rules that you need to start to play the game. Once you get, you know, the training wheels are on, mm-hmm. but we haven't actually changed any rules to play this game.
Which isn't bad. I mean, if it's Pathfinder Lite, that's cool. I mean, it should be relatively light as the introductory game, and then you can start keeping more things on them. I mean, that's kind of how I got started, was I got, you know, drawn in with the Red Box and then immediately slammed into Advanced Dungeons & Dragons, so...
Mm-hmm.
With the three guys named Chris, none of whom are you.
And they remain not being me.
That's true. Even, you know, 32 years later.
Yeah, eerie how that happens. Mm-hmm. Stealing Cthulhu. Don't know anything about it, but it's got a nomination. There it is.
There you have it.
So that is, have we said everything on the Product of the Year list?
Did we mention the masks, the RPG thing? The masks, 1,000 memorable NPCs for any RPG?
Ah, no, we did not mention
that.
And that looks kind of cool, actually. If you just need to pull stock characters or, you know, this says 1,000 memorable NPCs.
There you go.
So I imagine they're stock characters with a twist, something you can understand quickly.
Something you can populate your boss levels with.
Exactly.
Yeah. Actually, and I know Stealing Cthulhu, it turns out.
Oh, okay. Tell me about
it. It's from Thieves of Time, and essentially it's a very storyteller-oriented way of doing Call of Cthulhu.
Okay.
I thought it was kind of cool. I was first introduced to it a while ago by my buddy Judd, and so I read through the teaser PDF they put out and stuff. So.
Okay. Let's talk about the best supplement.
Okay. Let's talk
about also on the list. Yeah, also on the list, Star Hero, we've already talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Another Cthulhu thing. So there's like Cthulhu in every category here.
I've noticed that horror and Cthulhu, and I guess Cthulhu's new zombies.
Yeah.
For this era.
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel about it.
Yeah.
I'm kind of over zombies, and I'm getting kind of weary on Cthulhu.
That's because you've been playing a lot of Bender Cthulhus.
Yeah, I've been on a Cthulhu bender.
You have.
You know, before that it was steampunk. That got old kind of quick.
I don't know if there was enough steampunk out there to make it get old quick.
Yeah, I kind of saw it everywhere.
Okay, so what games were utilizing steampunk?
There was a D20 game that came out early on.
Okay.
That it was like Iron something. I can't remember. I don't know.
I
maybe.
Had the Iron Kingdom stuff.
Yeah, maybe. But I just, you know, it was an aesthetic that didn't really appeal to me very much. I thought a couple of the things that I saw people do with it were really clever and creative and attractive, but, you know, it just wasn't my scene. Although,
not my scene.
It's not my bag, babe. Yeah. And but I did, you know, the Airship Pirates is very steampunky, and it is in fact,
that's true.
You know,
I'll grant you that. There was a fair amount of Zeppelin-y kind of Castle Falkenstein-y type stuff going on.
Right,
with that
right.
Origins back in 2004 and 2005. But I don't think it had the kind of impact that the zombies, because the zombies had a good run. It was basically 2005 to 2010, 2011.
Yeah,
I'll
give you that. I mean, they've definitely been permeating everything lately. So.
And now, little by little, we're seeing more and more of the superhero stuff. So I think that's going to be what comes after Cthulhu, but I don't know what preceded.
Well, I hope so, because I like superheroes already.
Yeah. No, I hear you there. I'm not
zombies
sure.
I could take or leave. You know, some zombie things have been really cool. Some zombie things have been like, was that really necessary?
Right.
Like Marvel zombies?
Yeah. Although I enjoyed some of the storylines in that. I found it amusing. All right, so anyway, back to the supplements.
Yeah, so Cthulhu by Gaslight is the supplement there from Chaosium, which is the, you know, producer of the official Cthulhu game.
Right. Call of.
GURPS Horror is on this list as well,
right,
with Star Hero from the other list. Dungeons & Dragons, Player's Options, Heroes of the Feywild, another WotC supplement for D&D.
Right. Which is where your Barbie comes in, I think.
No, that would be a different edition, but yeah. So I don't know. You got a favorite here?
I don't, but I have to say that I'm kind of leaning towards the Agents of Oblivion.
Yeah, that looks interesting. That's the one we didn't actually say out loud yet.
Right.
So,
we didn't say that out loud. I thought we looked at that. I'm sorry.
No,
I apologize. We
should go to realityblurs.com and look at that one.
Yes.
So that's that looks neat, and I really don't know how to define it in a few sentences.
Me either.
Agents of Oblivion. Yeah. Okay, so I wanted to talk about best website.
Okay.
Because Obsidian Portal is up for an award, and I'm really kind of encouraging people to vote for it because I want to see more people using it.
Mm-hmm.
Because it has a great feature that nobody's using.
Which is what?
It's like a, kind of a person finder.
Okay.
On Obsidian Portal. You can like post your location on Obsidian Portal and say whether you're looking for a game or you're hosting a game and you need players.
Lord, I should have done that when I moved up here.
I know. There is a lot of different websites which are hosting bulletin board style game notices. And it's too dispersed throughout the ether for there to be a single consolidated place. And I would like to see Obsidian Portal become it, or at least become one of the hubs. You know, that because I would like there to be more people on it.
Is there content decent? Is it something that I would want to go and visit on a weekly or daily basis?
Obsidian Portal is a place where you can host information for your game.
Gotcha.
They have a wiki. You can host maps. You can host a campaign log. It's basically everything. You know, you can start an account and have everything you need to keep track of your campaign and hand out information for your campaign.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure if they have a virtual tabletop. I don't think they do. But if you have, you know, if your group is meeting locally and you just need some place to post information to the group, Obsidian Portal is beautiful for this.
Okay.
But it's also got this, you know, People Finder feature that, you know, I would really like to see, you know, get more used.
I should have used it myself, but I will, okay. I think, from here on out.
Okay. So so that is best website. That's the campaign. That's actually, you know what? I'm going to campaign again.
You are?
Yeah. So I said I was only going to do a campaigning for that one website.
Right.
But you know what? My friend Mike is up for best blog.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Sly
actually.
Flourish.
Sly Flourish.
He is nominated for an any award in the category of best blog. He is up against Campaign Mastery, Gaming as Women, Gnome Stew, Roving Band of Misfits, and there he is at the bottom of the list. Sly Flourish, go and vote for him.
Please. He's given us several solids, and I think it would be nice if we support him on this.
So that is best blog.
All right.
Now let's talk about gaming products. In the category of best aid / accessory, all of these look like they are things that I would like to have.
They look the same to me. We did check out the Shadowrun Runners toolkit, and I'm not as excited about that one, but the other ones, like the Dungeon Morph cards, for example.
Yeah, those look really cool.
I have the original Dungeon Morph sheet.
The Geomorph?
Yeah, the Geomorphs.
Yeah.
Those were fun.
Yeah, so those look pretty cool. Not sure if I'd ever actually use them, but I just like the way they look. The Game Mastery Chase cards, I mentioned in a previous podcast that I did use those. I didn't expect to, but then the party got in over their heads and had to run away, and something was actually chasing them, and I was like, I've got just the thing for that, and I pulled out the Game Mastery Chase cards.
Nice.
And they really liked it. It's a little mini game that, you know, that reflects basically the rules for Pathfinder.
Which is fun.
Throw some obstacles in their way, and they make a simple skill roll or saving throw or some similar roll to get around it. And they had fun doing it. So.
Nice.
And the masks, 1,000 memorable NPCs for any RPG by Engine Publishing, you know, to mention it once again, mm-hmm. looks like a really cool thing to have.
It does, I have to say.
And then there's the Mutants and Masterminds GM's kit, which is, you know, Mutants and Masterminds, which I'm always in favor of. So
how would you not be?
Yeah. So anyway, so that's that category.
It's all about superheroes.
Yeah, I don't know what I would vote for that, but you know, they're out there.
I don't know. I think I'd have to probably go with the GM's kit.
I think I would go with the
chase cards are kind of cool.
I think I'd go chase cards as a, you know, aid accessory.
All right.
Yeah. So okay. So let's move on.
Okay.
How about best game?
Okay. Let's do best game.
Once again, we see Marvel Heroic. Once again, well, actually, you know what? We haven't seen this before. Oh yeah. Once again, we see Hollow Point.
Yes.
Did we see that before?
Yes.
Okay. And Savage Worlds Deluxe, Marvel Heroic and Savage Worlds Deluxe, I have just gotten. So,
is that what you picked up at Origins?
Yeah, I picked up Savage Worlds Deluxe at Origins, and I've had Marvel Heroic for, you know, a couple months. Still waiting for that game to happen.
I have heard so many good things about Doe, Pilgrims of the Flying Temple.
Okay.
From Evil Hat, which is, of course, Fridges.
Yeah, I always love Evil Hat, so.
But a lot of the guys I know who go to like JiffyCon and stuff like that have played it, and I'm really kind of keen on playing that.
Okay, cool.
And then, of course, there's Cosmic Patrol, which is not to be mistaken with Danger Patrol, which is one of my favorite little indie games.
It's not the same people. It's not the same system.
No.
It's just a similar name.
Yes.
Okay.
So do not confuse the two.
Yes, you had some speculation as to their connection previously.
Yes, and I contacted John Harper, and I put that to bed.
Okay, good. All right, let's talk about best podcast.
Okay, let's do it. We are not listed.
I notice our name conspicuously absent from this.
We are not listed. Once again, we've fallen for a lie of the man.
Therefore, none of them are worth anything to vote. No, I'm just
That's
kidding,
not true.
Of course. I listen to one of these pretty regularly.
Which is?
I listen to Role Playing Public Radio. I love it. They're irregularly paced as far as like when they come out.
Mm-hmm. Kind of like us.
I just love their podcast. It's Ross Payton and Tom Church, I think. And they do a great show. They do not bother as far as like keeping their language clean. They have the explicit tag.
Fair enough.
I thought I lost you there. You're fate. You're fated.
I'm not fated, but the devil you say.
Now you're back.
Rumpf.
You know, when you get excited and start yelling,
apparently
I can hear
you.
I
have to get angry.
Yeah. You're like the Hulk, but with
other
podcasting.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, RPPR, it is, that's their abbreviation.
Gotcha.
All I can say is check them out. They talk about various types of games. And they've got an actual play podcast feed that I don't listen to a lot of actual play.
Okay.
But it's there if other people do.
Right.
I listen to their discussions, which I always find enlightening.
Nice.
So you said you listen to one of these.
I am a religious follower of the Genisodes. I think Jen is an excellent interviewer. I think she does a lot of great give and take with the people with whom she speaks. I find her topic engaging. She's just recently done her own Kickstarter
for
a game that she has developed called Project Ninja Panda Taco.
And what would that be?
Well, I would recommend going to the Genisodes homepage and looking that shit up. Stuff up. Looking that stuff up.
All right, we're going to lay on the bleeper this time.
No,
you know, it's not that I really want the clean tag, because we talk about some things that are, content.
Yes.
You know, sure, but I, like to avoid the explicit tag.
Considering the amount of time that you drop the F-bomb and stuff like that just in regular conversation, this surprises me. I'm shocked, but that's me. Have you listened to Haste, the official Obsidian Portal podcast?
I have not.
Maybe we should start doing that.
Yeah, I think so.
Than we are.
I think that's worth checking out.
Okay. But yes, definitely give a listen to both Genisodes and RPPR. I'm going to start giving RPPR some listening to see how much I like them. And there you go.
All right, I am on the iTunes store right now.
Okay.
And I am putting Genisodes in my feed.
Great.
Genisodes podcast, subscribe free.
Nice.
My God, there's a panda.
There sure is.
All right. So there we go.
It's part of Project Ninja Panda Taco, I think, as a matter of fact.
Oh, that's dash cunning, that is.
That is. Tell me about it.
And Haste, the official Obsidian Portal podcast, is going in my podcast feed. It shall be done.
And it has been done.
And I will be an informed voter by tomorrow.
There you go. Good for you.
That is important to a democracy, an informed electorate.
Indeed.
So I figure the Ennies is probably the only place where we'll see that in America. So anyway, not to get political. Yes, next time on political podcasting.
Exactly. On political role-playing podcasting.
All right, let's move on.
Let's do the best RPG-related product.
Okay, we've got the Complete Kobold Guide to Game Design, which we talked about in the context of it being nominated for an Origins Award.
Did it not win an Origins Award? Did it lose out to Shadow Over Scotland?
I'm not sure what category it was in, so I don't know where it lost, but it lost.
I think it was in the accessories, so that's why I'm saying.
Okay. Yeah, then that's where it lost.
Okay.
It lost every category it was nominated in. How's that?
So what about Carnival Arcane? Do we know what that is? It looks like it's some kind of music sort of thing.
I really couldn't say.
Yes, it's a Halloween-y music kind of thing.
Midnight Syndicate, I believe they were the ones who did the music on that promotional D&D disc that came out in the early 2000s.
Yes, so I believe that is music. That is mood music.
Okay. All right.
And then there's my favorite one, which is the Cthulhu Wrapping Paper. Woo!
it's from the good people at Gaming Paper.
Yes.
And I actually, when I gave Eric his birthday present, I wrapped it in gaming paper.
Yay!
So, because it comes on a wrapping paper roll.
Nice.
And
did it come in, was it a bunch of hex? Was it a hex?
Yeah, it was hex. It was hex maps.
Nice.
Yeah.
Rock on. I love hex maps.
Yeah. On Lords of Waterdeep, I finally got a chance to play that. I had been mentioning wanting to play it in the last show. I've gotten to play it.
Nice.
It's good. I enjoy it. It's a board game.
I've heard good things about it, not only from you.
Oh, good.
Yes.
And, we kind of harsh on Wizards for being the big dog in the room and having the products that everybody's heard of. But, it's a fun game. I'll give them that.
Yeah.
And they've done a lot of board games lately, and that's one of them. That's a good one. It is not compatible with the other board games that they're doing that all fit together, like Castle Ravenloft,
gotcha.
The D&D adventure system cooperative games. It is not one of those.
Okay. I like it just because it's Waterdeep, and I think Waterdeep was one of the funnest toys to ever come out of TSR, quite frankly.
Uh-huh. The entire run of every active edition of D&D I've played, I have avoided Forgotten Realms.
Really?
Yeah, it just never appealed to me. And yet Golarion is kind of similar in flavor.
Right.
And I'm all over that.
Interesting. I liked Forgotten Realms, not necessarily because it had a bunch of big hefty kingdoms that had fallen into ruin, but I liked it because of when the first gray box set came out, it had so little actual content that it just gave you the dimensions of the sandbox and the kind of sand that was in it. And let you make it yourself. And I had a great time with that. I played the hell out of the Sea of Fallen Stars.
Mm-hmm.
And Waterdeep and Candlekeep and Neverwinter. There's a lot of fun on the Sword Coast. There's a lot of fun in the north.
Mm-hmm.
There's a bunch of fun bad guys. The Red Wizards of Thay and the Zentirum and places like that I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
So
I think my main problem with Forgotten Realms was that it seemed like there were too many superheroes walking around.
With Elminster and Kelbin and people like that?
Yeah, it just seemed like there were too many active and powerful characters for your character to do anything meaningful. And that was addressed many times in the products. It's like, you know, these people are too busy to do things. You know, that's what they need you for. And,
well,
you know,
see,
I'm thinking
is that I just kind of left them out altogether when I ran.
Yeah. Yeah, just about every GM that wanted to run Forgotten Realms would have a cameo of one of them show up, and I'm just like, you know what? I'm not interested.
No, I wasn't either, really. Elminster, couldn't care less. The interesting thing for me was when we decided to play Burning Wheel set in the Forgotten Realms, Kelvin Blackstaff, because we centered ourselves in Waterdeep, Kelvin Blackstaff showed up,
mm-hmm.
But mostly for me to swear at him with my dwarven character. So that was a lot of fun.
Cathartic, I bet.
It was very, very cathartic.
Okay.
But yeah.
Last thing on the list, Tales of the Far West. I know nothing.
I know nothing also.
Okay, let's move on.
Very good.
Have we anything to say about the best setting?
I have something to say about the best setting.
I kind of suspected you might.
Well, I actually have it for two reasons, which I hadn't realized before. One is Ashen Stars, which I am gagging to play. Because
tell me about Ashen Stars.
Ashen Stars is a space opera setting.
Okay.
And I like it because it reminds me an awful lot of Star Frontiers, which is a game that never really took off.
Mm-hmm.
Had a lot of problems, but just to play it was a joy.
Mm-hmm. I made up my own characters for Star Frontiers when it came out when I was like 12. And, you know, because I was so into D&D, I was like, hey, D&D people put out a science fiction game. I want to play it. And I really read all the material. I really liked the idea of the game. And, you know, like, I couldn't even find anybody to play D&D with, let alone Star Frontiers.
Oh, I played a mini that my buddy Matt ran, and then I ran a mini for a different group, my high school gaming group, in fact. And we had a blast. And I missed that, and I've gone through so many sci-fi games, so many space opera type games, and they're either very much set on a theme like The Serenity or things like that, which is fun, but not really what I'm looking for.
Right.
And Ashen Stars is more along the lines of what I'm looking for.
Very cool.
It's a little...
Yeah, everybody's doing like dark horror space now, like Eclipse Phase, which, you know, looks really cool, but it also looks kind of dark.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the other thing that I like is Unhallowed Metropolis, because I think this was based on a game that I was playing online, wherein it was kind of a turn-based deal, and essentially what happens is London is kidnapped by bats.
Okay.
You have to do these different things.
Where did it go?
It went deep underground.
All right.
Which is kind of underground in the same way that Morgan of the Warlord fame is underground with Skataras.
Okay.
And that it's actually another dimension. It just looks like it appears in the center of the earth kind of thing.
Hmm. Okay.
I really like that setting. I really like the online game. I'd kind of like to role play in it.
Well, I'm, you know, on board with you, man.
All right.
All right, so that is all the awards we're going to cover. There's other topics, but we didn't know any of the products in there and didn't really have any interest in the topic. So
True.
We just We decided to let it go. Voting is open until the 29th of July, so hopefully I will get this out before then.
Right.
And if you are listening after the 29th of July, forget all the campaigning we've done. You're too late. You've failed.
Exactly. And it's the 29th is this coming Sunday. This coming Sunday.
My calendar agrees.
Good.
So, okay, synchronize your calendars.
And I'm wondering if you can get it out before... No, I'm kidding. I'm not. You're the workhorse here. I'm just merely the guy who sits there.
Hopefully I can
comments.
Get this out before Gen Con.
Here's hoping.
Okay. So anyway, that's that.
Right.
And I actually got an email today from Obsidian Portal saying vote for us in the Ennies.
Oh,
and I agree. Yeah. Vote for them in the Ennies.
Good for them.
Okay, so...
So, anything new on D&D next? Oh, insider information?
Yeah. All right, yeah. So that's kind of half the news. This is going to be a long news segment.
That's okay, because so was the Origin Awards.
Yeah, that's true. I was listening to the D&D podcast, the official D&D podcast, and Mike Merles has said on such a podcast that there will be new material released at Gen Con.
Nice.
So these will be class options. They will still be pre-gen characters.
Okay.
They are not releasing the character creation rules yet, mm-hmm. because they're still kind of tweaking the system that everything's going to be laid over.
Okay.
But what they're doing is offering more options. He mentioned mostly options with the fighter. You can tune the complexity of your fighter. He said that some people want to play a really simple fighter who just runs in and hits things, and some people want to play a fighter with lots of different maneuvers and options. And
right.
He says both of those things are going to be there.
So your sword slinger versus your Conan type.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. So that's something you'll see at Gen Con. But a lot of people are kind of chomping at the bit for more D&D Next, you know, release the next playtest, release the character creation rules. I can't play this playtest until I can make my own character from the ground up. And this, you know, that's kind of like releasing
the
whole game.
Oh, sorry. It is releasing the whole game, isn't it?
Yeah, and that's not something that's likely to happen.
Yeah. No, it certainly is not. Sad, but...
Yeah, they're releasing more bits and pieces as time goes on. They've got a lot of work ahead of them in D&D Next, and they don't have the ability right now to throw an entire game out to the public and say, playtest this. They're doing, you know, here's the combat system. Playtest that. We'll give you characters later.
Hmm.
So given the pace at which things are coming out, this current edition of the playtest was out before Origins. This is what they demoed at Origins.
Right.
And it had been out for a week or two, I believe, before Origins. Next packet is coming out at Gen Con.
Okay.
It's, monster creation rules, character creation rules. Those things are way down the line.
Right.
And then putting them all together, that's way down the line. So I'm going to challenge you, Peter.
Yes.
I'm challenging you now.
Mm-hmm.
Give me a prediction. When is D&D Next coming out?
Gen Con 2014.
Oh, you bastard. That's what I was going to say.
Okay, Gen Con 2013.
Okay, I'm going to be right. You're going to be wrong now, because I said 2014
fine.
First.
That's fine.
Okay.
I'll let you have this one.
Yeah, I mean, so that's my best guess. That's like the soonest I think they could get it out, because it takes a long time to do this exact sort of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of player feedback is going to, you know, alter what they've already got so far.
Well, that's what it was all about, right? Was that it was supposed to be about the mm-hmm. player feedback.
Yeah, I mean, they're getting ideas on how to go forward with things. I'm not sure how much they'll go back, but we'll see.
What you're saying.
I think, you know, it makes sense that they'll be changing some of the things that are, you know, not pleasant now. But what he was saying in the podcast was more about adding on to what they have rather than undoing things that they have released.
So they have a foundation, and they're just trying
yes.
to build onto the foundation. They're not trying to extract anything else from the foundation.
Mm-hmm. And people seem to be happy with the system so far. But, you know, this is the playtest is like first to third level. I'm not even sure how high it goes, but it's... You know, I looked through the playtest documents for the current playtest edition, and there weren't third-level spells, so it can't go past, you know, whatever, you know, like third, fourth level.
Well, they may have bumped that up for the Gen Con, but...
Yeah, I'm sure there will be another, you know, level of spells in the Gen Con release.
Right.
I mean, I would hope so.
Right. Certainly.
Because people have been playtesting it, and they're ready to go on. You know?
Right, exactly.
So I'm kind of hoping that they do take care of the things that they were talking about in the playtest. They were talking about streamlining the system and making the character abilities, character powers more linear. Like in 3rd edition, 3.5, Pathfinder, 4th edition, you start getting some obscene numbers coming from the player side of the table.
Oh, yes. Yes, indeed.
I mean, if you think back to 1st edition, you know, who was your damage dealer, right? Your fighter?
Pretty much. Or if you were a high enough level, your magic user.
Right, but what kind of damage were they doing?
I'm trying to think, because I seem to recall the heftiest of the spells was, like, Fireball or Ice Storm.
Yeah, Fireball was a nuke,
yeah,
in 1st edition.
Pretty much.
Because your fighter swinging a weapon, he's doing at most maybe 20 points of damage if he has, like, a girdle of giant strength.
You totally said girdle.
I did.
Did our explicit tag go away now?
Man in a girdle. No. So anyway, if he's got like a belt of giant strength.
Right.
Oh, it's a girdle. It's first edition.
It's a girdle of giant strength.
And he's doing max damage, and you know, all crits in first edition were house rules.
Unless he was using like a Vorpal sword or a short of sharpness, in which case if he
right, that's
high
true. There were
sharpness,
some...
he lopped off a limb. If he
that's true.
Vorpal sword, he lopped off a head, provided the thing had a head.
Right. Right. Yeah, so, I mean, there were some instant kills, but let's just look at numbers. Like, his damage was about 20, maybe top.
Yeah, I mean, and to beef that up, you needed magical item assistance.
Right, and that's kind of, like, 20 is about what you're going to see even with magic, you know, even with your most powerful magic weapon, sword, strength items. You know, as far as I recall, four fighters, you know, in a single
day. Between, like, 20 and 24, that's about right now.
Yeah, but, you know, so in comparison, your magic user throwing the fireball, that 48
was 48 hit points, you know, easy.
Yeah, I mean, well, it's, you know, at 6th level you get 6d6, and that was unheard of from anybody else's 6th level.
True.
And that scaled with the wizard, or the magic user, sorry, whereas the fighter's damage was pretty constant.
Very true.
Now compare that to 3rd edition, where your power level keeps going up, and the amount of damage you're going to do in a round just keeps going up.
Right.
And up, and I recall this was actually in a game Mike ran. He was a little bit nervous about. I don't know if I ever told him I did this to be a jerk to the system. And, hey, nothing personal. But he said I only want core rules because I think some of the other books are kind of broken. So I sat down to make my fighter barbarian to, you know, basically to show him the system and go, no, core rules is pretty broken
too.
Yeah,
I know. Did you ever read the power plays in the Dragon magazines?
For which edition?
For 3rd edition.
No, I don't. I probably did, but I just don't recall.
You could do these. You could. They showed you how to create things like, they called it the teleporting monk.
Uh-huh.
And it was basically a monk that could jump into the middle of melee, mm-hmm, affect 3 or 4 different people, and then leap back out.
In the same
in
round?
The same round.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing you saw in 3rd and 4th edition. As you know, by way of comparison, my fighter barbarian, raging, doing a crit, and doing 3 attacks. Actually, he did 4 attacks around. He was raging, hasted, crit, with a strength item, and one, I think one of his attacks missed. And he did 130 points of damage to the monster in a round. And
7th level,
you know, anything that can take that is going to destroy the party, you know, one hit.
Yeah. That's our old friend,
you know,
Trask.
So, yeah, so, I mean, he had made up this encounter with this really tough monster that was going to be a challenge, and I basically decimated it.
Right.
And that's, you know, the kind of thing you saw from the player side of the table in 3rd edition, was massive numbers like that.
Yeah, actually.
So one of the design goals that they have stated for D&D Next is that they're going to kind of flatten that out a little bit.
Okay.
So I'd like to see it. And, you know, I was actually talking about this same exact problem with Eric yesterday.
Okay.
And he was talking about how we saw a lot of rampant munchkinism starting in 2nd edition when they started
with
adding...
With skills and powers.
With skills and powers, but actually before that.
With kits.
In my kits and fighter specialization.
Oh, right, specialization. I'd forgotten about those.
Yeah, the first time I really saw munchkinism was a 2nd edition fighter. Yeah. Where if you spent all of your weapon and non-weapon proficiency slots for two weapon fighting style specialization, ambidexterity, weapon proficiency, specialization longsword. You could swing twice, two longswords every round, do extra damage with each one, almost never miss, and get an extra attack every other round.
Wow.
So from first edition, your first level fighter went from doing at most maybe 18 to 20 points of damage in a round to probably dishing out about 45.
Wow.
So that was the first sign of munchkinism that I saw in D&D.
Right. I
mean, I'm sure it was there before that with, you know, people giving their characters massive powerful items, but that was the first character build munchkinism that I really recall seeing.
Yeah,
and,
see,
you know,
yeah.
Third edition kind of kept going with that, and there was a power curve with, you know, releases, although some of the things in the later releases were really kind of weak, because I kind of got the feeling they were afraid of a power curve.
Yes, I agree.
I don't know if you remember Dragon Shaman from 3rd Edition. That is a really weak player class.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all, and probably because it was such a weak player class.
Yeah, nobody would ever want to play one, because like, you didn't really get very much out of it, whereas, you know, your fighters and barbarians were throwing around, you know, meteors.
Right, exactly.
You know, you might have three times a day a breath weapon. You know?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I think they were just kind of gun-shy about the power curve.
Well, you know, when you come up with things like, what was it, Masters of the Wild, where they would come up with things like Ooze Master.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff like that. Which is one of those things that I want to play at some point, really. I'm dying to play with.
I really didn't like the prestige classes in 3rd edition. I really wished, because I thought every single prestige class that you took, you gave up too much.
There was a certain amount of ludicrousness to them as well, though. I mean, that's kind of the reason why I want to try it out, because I just want to see exactly how silly it is.
Well, there were two types. Well, I'm going to say two, and then I might list three, so don't hold me to two.
There are two kinds of people in this world.
I recall prestige classes that were very campaign theme based. Like, you can join an organization and you will be one, and that was a prestige class.
Oh, like Harper Mage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, okay.
And the other type of prestige class that I recall was something that made you ridiculously good at one thing.
Yes. Yes. I liked those as well. Those made me smile.
Right.
Talk about trick.
Things like the Arcane Archer, I thought was I kind of felt you were giving up too much of your core class for this ability. Like, I kind of liked what Paizo did with archetypes, but even more so, I liked what 4th edition did with themes.
Yes.
And because you don't give up anything, you just lay over this, you know, this set of abilities. You might get a new one every few levels. And it just, you know, it themes your character. It gives your character a flavor, but it doesn't take away your core class.
Character has a flavor?
Yeah. Tastes like chicken.
Mm, tasty character.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, next time on 4th edition podcast. But, okay, we were talking about D&D next.
Yes, we were. Yeah. Yes, we were.
Sorry, I got a little sidetracked. I do go
it's
off
okay,
on a rant.
Because honestly, I think you're bringing home some very salient points, which is that D&D Next is supposed to satisfy your gaming urge, no matter what it is, be it a munchkin, be it you know somebody who wants to be more storyteller oriented, whatever you want to do, they want you to use them, which is why I keep calling it the next GURPS.
Mm-hmm.
But
well, I hope that it does well. I really hope it does. Because I would really hate to see Hasbro shut the brand down.
Oh, yes, me too. On the
because
plus side,
I don't,
if they shut the brand down in the future, someone might be able to resurrect it.
Yeah, but Hasbro really never gets rid of any of their IPs.
Oh, fuckers. Oh, I'm sorry. Shoot, yeah. There it goes. There goes the explicit tag.
Consider it bleeped. So. All right, I'll tag it.
What about jerks? There we go.
Yeah.
You can cut that part out.
I'll bleep jerks too, just
there you
go. But yeah, I mean, I don't recall Hasbro ever selling off one of their properties. And so I think if D&D Next does not do well, they may shut it down. And I can't imagine a world where there's not a version of D&D around.
Yeah, I can't either, really.
Even if I'm not playing it, you know, because I wasn't playing second edition for a while.
Yeah,
and, you know, but I knew it was still there for me if I wanted to come back.
Right, right.
Yeah. So anyway, so D&D Next had their design goals kind of take aim at some of the complaints people had about 3rd edition and 4th edition.
Okay.
So in the meantime, they have released something that kind of aligns with 4th edition.
which is?
I just saw my first box of this today. I had no idea this thing existed until I heard the podcast the other day. They were talking about Dungeon Command, which is a new minis game.
Was this off of the role playing public radio?
No, I heard this on the D&D podcast, the D&D official podcast.
Gotcha.
And then I went and I looked at these things. They look pretty nice. It's a minis game that is not dice based. It's you know, you draw cards from your deck, and you can the cards have orders on them, and you can order your minis to do things.
Okay.
So it's kind of like a card minis game rather than a dice minis game.
Gotcha.
And it looks pretty interesting.
It sounds interesting. I mean, one of the minis games that I played with cards was one with ships was pirates versus, you know, privateers kind of thing.
Okay.
And that was a lot of fun. I
think
it.
I know the one you're talking. I never got to play it, but I've seen the little buzz.
Yes. I playtested it back at Origins 2005.
Oh, wow.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah. It's fun. Enjoyed it.
So it looked interesting. I don't know anything other than, you know, it looked like something that was fun. They sell for like $40 a set, though. So it's kind of, it's really out of my impulse buying range.
Ah.
But if it catches on and I see lots of people playing it, I'll definitely pick up a set and join in.
Groovy. That sounds like fun. It's not like a Petit, but I think I've got a lot of friends who would find that very interesting.
Right. Well, it's basically a table game. It's something that, you know, you can play in a couple hours on a, you know, without any context of adventure or
right.
or campaign story.
See, they should do something like this in the vein of Gloom, where you have to like explain how this attack works against your other guys.
Oh, that would be cool, actually. That's kind of what we were doing with the time we were playing Sentinels of the Multiverse.
Oh.
You play a card, and that basically has the power description and the effect. But a couple of times around the table, when we got bored with just saying this card does this, mm-hmm. we kind of described in comic book, you know, fashion what was going on while somebody played their card.
You see, that's a lot of fun to me. That makes sense.
Okay.
That adds an element to the game overall, I feel. So.
Yeah. So your thoughts on D&D Next, Dungeon Command, anything?
Nothing in particular, fortunately. I hate to be the
pretty
expect on this.
Play? Oh, that's okay. Do you expect to play D&D Next? Or do you think you've moved on from D&D itself?
I don't think that I will ever have moved on from D&D itself. I've had too much fun retroing things like Against the Giants, and I've had too much fun running First Edition again.
Yeah,
And it's very funny for me to be playing First Edition again because I can sit there and go, hey, I remember when I was 14 years old playing this, and I just didn't get the nuances of some of this stuff.
Yeah, and I've seen a lot of the things that, I mean, in the same vein, like all of the things that I didn't do in First Edition that I'm, you know, seeing now was possible.
Right.
I was like, man, I wish I'd done it this
way.
Yeah,
and it's the same thing with me as well. And then that's kind of what replaying Village of Hamlet in the original setting.
Uh-huh. Well, when you ran that for, you know, the three or four hours that you were able to do that for me and Sharon and Jim,
right.
That was a blast because we got into one fight.
You got into one fight. It was the ambush in the woods on the way to the path to the moat house.
We were afraid for our lives.
You should be.
Because we had one and two hit points each.
Yeah, exactly. You had to be afraid for your lives.
Yeah.
Plus, it was important for you to deal with NPCs, you know?
Yes.
It was integral. And that was kind of cool.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
And there were it wasn't roll a die to see if they agree with you, you know?
Right.
Which I have kind of mixed feelings about because on the one hand, it's like, well, if somebody is a bad, you know, bad speaker, but their character isn't,
yes.
that kind of should be offset with a die roll.
Well, they did have the charisma changes to reactions because everybody essentially starts out with a kind of neutral reaction. And if you want to call it out, you can make a charisma roll, and if it happens to boom it up, you know, it might be one of those things where they tell you, oh, you know what, there used to be a temple over here in the woods versus, you know, 17 years ago there was an elemental temple of evil, and we, you know, one of the heroes of the village went and dealt with it, and now he's up in the north fighting a new evil and blah, blah, blah kind of thing, you know?
Right. That's one of those many hundreds of subsystems that, as a 12-year-old, I just kind of glossed over.
No, I understand, and I think we all did that. One of the things that played a big deal was morale.
Uh-huh.
Which was huge because at one point I ran Village of Hamlet for another group as a mini, mm-hmm. and the fighter cut down the head bandit on his first attack. And
wow.
The other bandits had to make a morale check, and one of them left because he's like, nope, I'm done. This guy was tough enough to take out the guy who can take me out, so I'm done. See ya.
Yeah, I don't even recall where the rules were for when to roll morale checks in first edition, because it was just another one of those subsystems, mm-hmm. you know. Because as a DM in first edition, I was, like, this is when I was, you know, 16 and less, because after that I was DMing second edition.
Yep.
I didn't DM anything for a while. I played. And then the next time I DM'd, we were in second edition.
Right.
But so before that, I was just kind of like, I really enjoyed seeing the players do well, and so I kind of avoided save or die things to throw at them,
right.
And I avoided, and I avoided having monsters run away with their treasure.
Oh, interesting.
So the thing about the morale check, and you know, the monster was going to, you know, if that monster ran away, they wouldn't get his plus one sword.
Well, the other thing is that I had a situation occur wherein. Something failed their morale check, ran deeper into the dungeon, grabbed the stuff that they had stashed, and took off out a different exit.
Yeah, there you go.
So that was good. That was a good overall challenge, really.
And what does DM stand for?
Dick move.
Exactly.
No, honestly, I tried not to make it. I tried to be as level as possible. It's just that it was funny to see people playing in the modern mindset,
mm-hmm.
the 3.5/Pathfinder mindset. In a game that
mm-hmm.
is not designed for that.
Mm-hmm.
And just look absolutely stunned when something didn't work.
How would you characterize the Pathfinder mindset in comparison to the first edition mindset? I say Pathfinder, 3.5 Pathfinder, same difference,
I think,
right?
You tend to take into account the math a lot more.
Okay.
And so you make educated risks with Pathfinder 3.5.
That you wouldn't take in first edition?
That you don't. That it doesn't exist in first edition. That sort of thing doesn't exist. You're not.
Do you have an example?
I guess one of the best examples I had was the fact that we had a neutral cleric, and he said,
mm-hmm.
"I want to get information out of this guy." And I went, "Great. What skill are you going to use for that?" And he just looked at
okay.
me and he goes, "I'm just going to beat it out of him." And I went, "Okay." And so he hit him. And I
uh-huh.
rolled a morale check, and the guy thought, he hits like a pussy. Not a big deal.
You're really gunning for that tag.
I'm sure I can talk my way out of this. And so he started to try to talk his way out of it. And at one point, I rolled to, because one of the things about the first edition D&D, you make a lot of rolls behind those screens. I made a roll behind the screen, and one of his compatriots had snuck up, because he was a thief. Had snuck in, and the cleric didn't see him. And so the guy who was captured and tied to the chair started pissing off the cleric so he'd leave.
Okay.
And the cleric left. And his friend came over and cut him loose, and they took off. And the cleric came back
okay.
and sat there and was like, "What happened?" And I said, "Well, you obviously didn't see his compatriot who came and helped him escape." And the player playing the cleric was very upset, and I said, "Okay, where in your training as a cleric of the God of Fate would you have come across interrogation techniques, torture techniques, and the ability to detect thieves?"
Okay. Also, the thief would have made a flat number roll.
Right,
I mean, he's got a percentage to move silent
right.
that has nothing to do with the cleric's perception abilities.
Nope. And so the thing is that as a cleric in 3.5 or in Pathfinder, he can have things like perception. He can make perception
right.
checks. He can make listen checks.
Uh-huh.
You know,
he can make intimidate checks.
He can make intimidate checks. He can make you know, all kinds of different things depending on if he took the skill or not. And
uh-huh.
you just don't have that available to you because as a cleric of fate, you, one, know how to teach people about theology. You know how to heal people. And you know how
mm-hmm.
to smite whatever it is you want to smite. And that's pretty much it. You're
that's
all
good.
About your god, really.
Uh-huh.
And promoting your god in the world. And so I think that the player was really kind of nonplussed by the fact that he didn't get to bring into effect the things that you can in later editions to stop a situation happening. Because, I mean, honestly, if he wanted to really beat up the guy to interrogate him, he would have had, number one, the really smart magic user come in, and the brutish fighter come in, have the fighter punch the living Higgs out of him, and then utilize, you know, the magic user intellect to outsmart the guy. You know?
And send the paladin off to go get a piece.
And there was no paladin, so it didn't matter. It was it was a basic four group. It was a thief, a fighter, a magic user, and a cleric.
Yeah. Well, that's something that is well played. Uh-huh. I don't know if I will see, you know, that kind of absence of, you know, detailing everything in D&D Next.
Right.
You describing that encounter kind of illustrates for me what Monty Cook was talking about in his recent blog article about game design.
Right.
It was sometime after he left the Wizards team, and he said he wasn't specifically talking about D&D Next game design, but he said that the fact that there's a person sitting behind the screen arbitrating events means that you don't have to have every single possibility detailed in your game.
Right.
In game mechanics. And so that kind of illustrates what he's talking about for me right now, you just telling that story. Mm-hmm. So we'll see how D&D Next happens. I would be sad if they did not keep some concept of feats in the game.
That I can understand.
Feats, I think, really kind of individualize your character, and even more so as your character goes on.
Yes, and I think that it comes to the various mechanics of combat and other things like that. It's nice to have the feats to make you special.
Right. You know? And, you know, it maybe not all of the, you know, must-have feats like power attack for fighters.
Right.
You know, any fighter that was strength-based that didn't take power attack was, you know, substandard, really.
True.
I mean, you really kind of had to take that one to keep up damage-wise.
Yes.
Especially
the fact that it was part of a tree.
Penetration.
It was part of a feat tree. So to take
power
attack,
it opened up everything
great
else,
things
right.
later on. So.
Right. Yeah, and so that was kind of like a must-have, you know, one of the reasons why fighters get so many feats is because, well, they kind of have to take power attack.
Well, that's not just that. It's also the fact that they don't have anything else backing them up. I mean, the whole idea behind it, I think, was the rogues had to be the skillmeisters, and the fighters had to be the featmeisters, because you had four different spellcasters, essentially, if you include the bards. You know, five with druids.
Well, the thing about feats is that there are thousands and thousands and thousands of feats, you know, spreads throughout 3.5. Mm-hmm. There were just about every game book that had mechanics in it had some feats in it. And every single player that went up to 20th level had maybe 6 or 7.
Mm-hmm.
So and despite the fact that you have, let's call it 7, because you've got an extra one along the way somewhere.
Okay.
First level, and sorry, little fence post error. You got one at first level, and then one at every 3 levels for third edition.
Yes.
So one at first, and then third, 6, 9.
Right.
So you ended up with 7 feats at the end of the game.
Yes.
And despite the fact that you had 7 out of, you know, let's say 2,500 feats in the game, you still saw characters take the same feats over and over
again. No, it's true. It's a shame, and that's a shame.
Yeah.
Because playing around with those was really one of the joys I felt of the new system, was being able to...
Yeah, I mean, I would find an oddball feat. Yeah, I would find an oddball feat sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And then just build a character to that feat.
Oh, that's kind of fun.
Yeah, because, you know, so, like, who would take this feat? Okay, well, this is why he has that feat.
Right.
This is what he can do with it. So, you know, and I was DMing, so I would sometimes throw these guys out there and...
Mm-hmm.
Against the party and say, well, why is he, you know, doing this? Well, he took this feat. He can run up the wall when he has a psionic focus.
There you go.
Well, that was pretty useless. Yeah, but I wanted to do it.
And, you know, it gives you an idea of where it's going to be useful and why it wouldn't be, you know, that kind of thing.
Right.
I think it's also it was kind of fun also to see the skill/feat mix for different rogues, because two of the players that I had a fun kind of idea for a mini that I ran, which was one was playing a complete and utter con man with the feats and skills to match that, and the other one was playing a complete and utter burglar, a second story man to the hilt. And it was just kind of great to see how they had avoided taking the same feats in order to come out with two very different
results.
And
now,
in
Pathfinder at least, there are what they call teamwork feats, mm-hmm. where they only work if you're standing near somebody else who has the same feat.
Oh, there you go.
So that's another take on it. But again,
that quite frankly,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah. But anyway, so that's my hopes for D&D Next is keep that specialness.
You had asked me at one point if I would ever leave behind D&D because it's not what I look for anymore, and I'd have to say that there's always going to be a special place for D&D for me, and I'm always going to want to play the new editions just to see how they play out.
Uh-huh.
Because I think that one of the cool things about D&D for all of us is that we got to see it evolve. And I think a lot of the fantasy indie stuff came from our original love affair with this tried and true old monster. Because, I mean, you know, first edition was full of problems, obviously. You could sit there and parry every attack that came at you and never take damage, you know.
I don't even remember seeing parry rules. The main thing that was the problem with first edition is that everything was a subsystem.
Oh, gotcha.
Everything was a mini game,
right.
You know.
Which didn't bother me so much. And honestly, replaying it doesn't bother you as much, especially when you've got the DM screens and everything's right there.
Oh, yeah, it didn't bother me at the time. It just didn't occur to me that was wrong, you
right.
know, that
no,
that was in any way inefficient.
Right.
You know.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, so that's yes, I will always come back to my old mistress. Whenever she puts on a new face, just to see if it's the same old song or not. So,
yeah, you know what's mind-boggling?
What's that?
In a few years, there's going to be people whose first edition of the game was D&D Next.
Ooh, good point.
I wonder what they're going to see, you know, when they look back and, you know, get into the game and go, hey, what's this fourth edition thing?
Exactly. What's probably going to happen is they're going to bundle all of first and second edition together and release it as D&D Classic.
Oh, that's hey! You're sitting on a gold mine track.
Sitting on a gold mine. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, I'm sorry. I promised I would never do Sean Connery.
You're supposed to do Michael Caine. I do Connery.
I'm Michael Caine.
And I'm Sean Connery.
And I'm quite uncomfortable right now. No, I can't do Michael Caine either.
Shelley, really Shelley.
Actually, I based my rogue trader. What's the other one? Dark Heresy character on Michael Caine.
Oh, fun.
And I spoke with my really bad Michael Caine impression.
That's what I love about us, though, is that you do a bad Michael Caine, and I do a terrible Sean Connery. And fantastic.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
We need a Kevin Bacon. No, I don't know.
Kevin Bacon? Really?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Wait, is there a Kevin Bacon link?
I was thinking
Michael
of an Alan
Caine
Bates,
Sean
personally,
Connery?
Or James Mason.
Oh, there you go. I sound a bit like God, don't I?
When you start talking like this, after a while, everything sounds the same.
Yes, and that's exactly why I haven't pooped in a week.
I feel very, very uncomfortable with this whole situation, especially when you touched me in the nuptials.
I you can't prove that.
And I don't plan to.
I was... Oh, no, I'm not going to do that one. Okay, so I was going to make a very bad joke, and I won't. So, you know, we've talked an awful lot about the Ennies and about Gen Con and about D&D Next.
Yes. Yes, we have.
So I think the news is pretty much the heart of the matter. What do you think?
I think you're right. I think you've summed up.
I think in order to keep this under an hour, we're going to have to bag it here.
Concur. Let us do that.
Okay. Well, we were going to talk all about evil, but we know now we have a topic for the next show that we can tell you about now.
Exactly. Instead of surprise like we surprise ourselves.
Yes. So we've got an awful lot to say about evil.
We do.
And so you can stay tuned. Peter, tell the good people how they can get
a
hold of us.
You can get a hold of us, of course, by following us on Twitter.
You can follow, yes. And you can find us on Facebook and like us.
We like it when you like us.
We like to be liked.
And you can also hit us up on G+.
Yeah, we're on G+. We're on Tumblr at rulezeropodcast.tumblr.com.
And we're also, you can get us by our emails. I am Pete@rulezeropodcast.com.
I am Chris@rulezeropodcast.com. And together, we are
rulezeropodcast@gmail.com. Woohoo!
Yeah. So that those are the many ways you can find us.
Yes.
Also, you can Google us.
Oh, that sounds practically dirty.
You know, there was a time a couple weeks ago when I typed in Felicia Day podcast and Rule Zero podcast was the first thing that came up.
Nice.
It lasted for about a day.
Oh, well, that's kind of fun.
That was cool.
Yeah. Makes me happy.
So, yeah, I got all tingly.
I don't blame you.
I was all verklempt.
I don't blame you there. Ugh. Spielkisch.
Yeah, stick to Chuck Connery.
Please.
So that's it for me.
And that's it for me.
So until next time.
Game on.
Game on. And I'm going to go play Dominion now.
You go, crazy boy.
Rule Zero Podcast is licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution License. You can use our podcast in your music video or send us to your friends and family, but be sure to mention our names on our website at www.rulezeropodcast.com. Segment and closing music is by Maggie Sansone, used by permission, and is available at maggiesmusic.com.